Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book chapter and verse 162 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the Working Class Supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Stop by Coal River Mountain Watch at CRMW.net and have a look. See for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today being Wednesday, July 9, 2008, so in fact, if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Wednesday evening, July 9, you are listening to a live show, and you're welcome to participate. I'll be giving out the email address and toll-free and toll telephone numbers in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it is there that you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as I speak. I'm logged in myself and several others. One, two, three, four. Nice crowd tonight. There are also links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page. There are links there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You'll find on strictlyconfidentialradio.com a link to the Head On Radio Network's main site. And it's there that you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a small part. At the headonradionetwork.com site, you'll also find a PayPal button that will make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network. If you'd like to participate this evening, it's a Just Us show. I'll be telling you more about the upcoming guests in just a moment. But tonight, it's Just Us, and you're welcome to call in about the topics I'm discussing or whatever is on your mind. It is Conversation Radio, and it helps when you call in. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That translates into 877-443-2366. And if you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, you could use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. That's area code 304-658-3333. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the break. So there are several ways to participate. Peter at headonradionetwork.com, or you can dial in using the toll-free line or the toll line, and you're welcome to join us in chat by stopping by strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll find all of the information for contacting us right there. What an interesting week this has been. I have missed you guys. It has been another chapter of the Internet Service Provider from Hell, which is to say Embark, and so been at it again. I believe it was Monday. The entire community lost dial tone again. And that was Monday from mid-morning till late afternoon. They finally got that fixed, and then the Internet was intermittent. And come Tuesday, the Internet seemed to be fairly stable, but I began experiencing a computer problem. Now, I was convinced that the computer problem was because of some software I'd installed the day before on Monday. Nice, briny, scanner arrived that I had purchased. My old scanner, my old HP scanner, was not compatible with Vista. Imagine that. So I don't use a scanner often, but I need one. So I went ahead and got a new one. It arrived from Newegg on Monday afternoon. So I hooked it up, installed the scanner and the various software. So I was convinced the problems I was experiencing Tuesday were from the scanner. Because suddenly on Tuesday I got blue screens of death. And I had the occurrence which I'd never seen before, and this computer anyway, files being corrupted when I was attempting to save them that were irretrievable, nasty things. And I was convinced it was a driver issue. The blue screens of death were saying it was a hardware failure. But I was convinced it was a driver issue. In any case, finally I called Bob yesterday afternoon around, I don't know, 3 or 4 and said I was biting the bullet. This can't go on anymore. I'm going to reload Vista. So I backed up everything, all the huge PST files for my email and all of the music and all of the files. It took a long, long time before I had a complete current backup. I wanted to use just copies rather than the backup. It's always easier that way. So in any case, after doing all that, I began to install Vista. I was installing it on a drive that was not my boot drive. It was a little secondary drive for you computer geeks out there. This won't take, those of you who are totally bored, this won't take but a second. Anyway, it was a little drive, a smaller capacity, but it was a fast drive. I was just using it as my paging file drive, or my swap file drive. And I began installing Vista, and it was very, very, very slow, and then it would stop, and I would start it all over again. It was very, very, finally, you gotta love Bill Gates. The Vista popped up and said, the drive you're attempting to install Vista, is going to fail soon, I think was the phraseology. Please install this to another hard drive. And I thought, cool, that was the problem all along. The drive that contained the swap file was corrupting the swap file, which is why Vista was going to long periods of not doing anything particular, just sitting there. Why it was corrupt. So anyway, I was relieved of the horrible task of having to reload Vista last night by pulling that drive out of the system and moving the swap file back to drive C, and everything is happy. Everything is super fast and super perfect. I couldn't be happier. Even the Internet is behaving well. So who could ask for more? In any case, it's wonderful to be back with you kids on a Wednesday evening. Let's see, what else was I going to tell you about? Oh, my. Something very specific, but I don't recall what it was right now. In any case, it's a dark and balmy night here on the dirt road in the middle of nowhere, across from the gay bar across the street. Ah, that's what I was going to tell you about. We have, for the DJ this evening at the gay bar across the street, we have none other than Mr. Hank Steinhauer, who's a DJ in Miami, and Hank will be playing for us between 10:30 and 11. Hank has a special All Gloria Gaynor set tonight. If you recall, we've run several of Hank's tracks or segments over the last month or two. He's done an All Cher segment for us, which is fabulous, and he did an All ABBA segment for us, which is also fabulous. And now we've gotten to an All Gloria Gaynor set this evening between 10:30 and 11 Eastern. So I'm looking forward to that. I want to let you know that Mr. Glenn Rivera, who is our Executive Director of Talent Bookings, has arranged for us tomorrow evening to have a guest. His name is Vincent Capretta. And I'm looking forward to Vincent. Vincent is definitely different from your average bear, and I think that you will enjoy Vincent. He's on the calendar for tomorrow evening. He'll be joining us about 9 o'clock, about 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then next week, we have none other than Charles Robbins. Now, Charles Robbins is the executive director of the Trevor Project. He'll be joining us next Wednesday. The Trevor Project is a national toll-free hotline that it's a crisis line for LGBT individuals who are considering jumping off the bridge or taking their own lives in any number of ways, which is, of course, rampant in the LGBT community proportionally. And speaking in terms of percentages, it is a much higher ratio of LGBT folks than straight kids who are offing themselves. And with the atmosphere, the politically charged atmosphere, thanks to the Bush administration, and Lord, the progress we could have made without those bastards in office. But nonetheless, it's difficult to grow up, period, whether you be straight, whether you be gay, or whether you be transgendered, or bisexual, or any other number, any other letter in our rainbow. It is difficult growing up, period. But in any case, this is a national hotline for LGBT kids. And we'll be looking forward to talking with him. That will be next Wednesday. I'm sure he'll give us an interesting story of how the helpline has helped individuals and also how you can help support the helpline. You'll recall last week, the last time we were together, we were talking about the log closet Republicans, of which I cannot abide, and of which Pam Spalding, bless her heart, she's in a huge feud with them. The executive director wrote her a nasty little email. I think she published it on her site, challenging her to meet him in public for lunch and how that she would end up thanking him, blah, blah, blah. The standard deluded log closet Republican speak that we're so used to. Speaking of log closet Republicans, I received an email from one of our listeners today. It goes by Tabasco. Tabasco Dog, thank you. And he was telling me about a movie I was not aware of called Elephant in the Room, which is all about, gasp, log cabin Republicans. So I looked that up on Netflix, and you can either check it out from Netflix or it's available as a on-demand view from Netflix. And so at some point this weekend, I'm going to watch it. I did look at a few minutes of it today. And in fact, it seemed to be at least the first 10, 15 minutes, which I had time to watch today, was a series of pompous, wealthy LGBT individuals who wanted to be sure that there was nobody getting anything free. talking about how generous they were. But by God, if you want to eat, you got to work. And all the hard-ass stuff that we hear from those people continuously. Firm believers they all are in the Cadillac welfare queen. And any case, I assume that at some point over the weekend I will be totally distracted and screaming at the DVD playback. And I'm sure I'll have some audio for you from that particular program on Monday. Again, that's Elephant in the Room. And I want to pick up, since we're in the subject, and since we're in this same general cesspool as the log closet Republicans, I'm going to pick up a little bit along the lines of where we left off the last time we were together at the beginning of the last show, the live show, regarding the Austin 12, the Austin 12 being named after the city of Austin. It was the 12 people who were prominent gay Republicans. Not just gay Republicans, mind you, they were prominent, meaning moneyed Republicans, who met with George W. Bush in 2000, and who this year, surprise, surprise, are not exactly rallying around John McCain. Oh, yes, there's trouble in River City. The log closet Republicans are having a hard time handling the stench that boils up from the Republican Party. Several members of the group told The Blade, a week before last, I believe it was, that they are considering voting for Barack Obama, gasp, in November, while the others say that they are lukewarm at best in their support of John McCain. All in all, three of them said they're either going to vote for Obama or seriously consider it. And three of them claim to be undecided between McCain and Obama, and three are backing McCain, and the other three declined comment altogether. So the Austin 12, we began talking about them. I'm going to cover a little bit more about them. They became notorious, or at least gained notoriety, depending on your point of view, after meeting with Bush in Austin, Texas, in April of 2000, and that was when Bush was still the governor of Texas and candidate. Now, during the meeting, the Austin 12 urged Bush to appoint openly gay federal officers and to include an openly gay speaker at the 2000 Republican National Convention. And they urged Bush to maintain President Clinton's executive order banning discrimination against gays in the federal workforce. And they point out that Bush complied with each of those requests during his presidency. Bush complied. It was convenient for Bush, don't you know? But lo and behold, when he endorsed, Bush I mean, the federal marriage amendment, there was trouble amongst the log cabin Republicans. Now, some of them are loyal to the bitter end and will vote Republican until the day they breathe their last breath, completely oblivious of the harm they do to the LGBT community and to the families of LGBT individuals. But many are beginning to turn their back. Many of them are refusing to support McCain, even though he voted against the federal marriage amendment in the U.S. Senate. One of the folks, David Greer, he was appointed to Bush's AIDS Advisory Board in 2003, left the Republican Party that very same year and has been a registered Democrat since then. Well, praise God. He said gay Republicans would never be strong enough or have a voice loud enough to influence the GOP, and that the party is not interested in the LGBT community and is only interested in exploiting gay Republicans for political gain. Note the repeated reference to gay as opposed to LGBT. That's because, of course, if you're many of these quotes come from log closet Republicans, and of course the only thing that exists are men. There are no women, and so which is why the repeated reference to gay Republicans as opposed to LGBT Republicans. But we've got one big old female log closet Republican. She's in the stack somewhere. I'll tell you about it. Greer has also said, as I quote, as long as there is a far right wing in the party, gay Republicans are way too small in numbers to have any effect. We actually end up doing greater and lasting harm to the whole, he actually says it, LGBT community. He got it right. Amazing, some of them are beginning to catch on. See, Greer was on the AIDS advisory board, and he left. He said that he resigned after Bush endorsed the marriage amendment, and he now works as a speechwriter for the National Association of Realtors. Of course, Bush has devastated the housing market with the unsound practices of printing more dollars. So I assume that Greer is going to be looking for new work soon, because I imagine life at the National Association of Realtors ain't too peppy right now. Greer said he would, regarding this election, he says, supporting, this had to be a bitter pill for him. In fact, several of them say how desperately they hate saying it, but he says that supporting the Democratic Party is the best way to achieve gay equality. But he added that the Democrats are mediocre on issues, our issues at best. And here's proof that Hillary does appeal to the Republicans. He says, I would have voted for Senator Hillary Clinton had she won the Democratic presidential primary, but he will not embrace Senator Barack Obama as a candidate. He really wouldn't say why. Could it be because he's colored? Could that be the problem? Greer argued that McCain doesn't care a whole lot about gay issues, and since the far right is having trouble mustering support from the conservatives, that McCain is going to take a far-right position so that he can garner their support. Then we have another log closet. His name is David Cantania, and he is the city council member for the District of Columbia. And he was also skeptical that McCain would change any of the GOP policies on gay issues. He says, I wouldn't give supporting him a second thought. The cards are on the table. I think gays are kind of kidding themselves. These are log closet Republican core people, mind you. I think gays are kidding themselves if they think John McCain is going to be better for the gay community than George Bush. Well, sweetheart, many of us are not kidding ourselves. We have known that fact for quite a while. I think what you're trying to say is that log closet Republicans are kidding themselves rather than gays in general if they think that John McCain is going to be any better for the gay community than George Bush. So this fellow Cantania, he left the Republican Party in 2004. This was after Bush announced his support for the marriage amendment. And he has become an independent, but he says he will vote for Obama in this election. A core member of the Austin 12, imagine that. Then there's Brian Bennett. He's the head of an ABC advocacy group and a public affairs consultant, there in California. Notice that all these folks come from fairly moneyed employment situations. I'm not at all surprised. Now, he's saying that McCain is more hostile toward gays than Bush was. He compares Bush's efforts at reaching out to the Austin 12 in 2000 to the recent endorsement of the California ballot initiative that would ban same-sex marriage, which, of course, McCain recently endorsed that ballot initiative. What they're failing to see is that Bush's efforts at, quote, reaching out to the Austin 12 in 2000 was a sham. All closet Republicans have a very difficult time seeing what is painfully obvious to all of us, which is the Satan in a box, and the fact that the devil himself has his arm up Bush's rear end, moving his mouth. But far from me to get off on a religious tangent. ProtectMarriage.com, by the way, is the organization that is leading the campaign for the amendment in California, and they announced on June 25th that McCain had sent them an email expressing full support for banning same-sex marriage, even though McCain has previously stated that it was up to the states. He is now, in order to garner, so he realizes there's no way he's going to win anyway, but if there's any possibility he will win, he'll have to have the support of the far right. So he's taking more and more right-wing issues under his little wing. Then Bennett goes on to say he's the ABC advocacy group and consultant. He says that by endorsing the initiative, McCain is alienating himself from the gay and lesbian population. Well, duh. let's see. Let's talk about Daniel Stewart. He was the head of the New York State Commissions of Corrections. And he said the entire Republican Party, he was a log closet, has turned him off for the last few years. Stewart was elected to the city council of Plattsburgh, New York, as a Democrat. But then the former New York Governor George Pataki convinced him to switch to the Republican Party. Imagine that, no doubt by holding visions of sugar plums and dollar bills as they danced in his head in front of him. So he did it, and he won. So now, boy, those closets just can't make up their minds. Stewart's planning on leaving the Republican Party because the party's not moving where he'd like it to move on issues that affect him personally, such as same-sex marriage and his resentment over having to travel to California in 2004 to marry his partner, and oh, so many other reasons. Yes, just as the wheels are falling off the wagon of the Republican Party, the wheels are falling off the one-horse open sleigh of the log closet Republicans. He says, I've felt abandoned by my party for the longest time, and I'm probably going to leave the Republican Party. Where's my little tiny world's smallest violin? I certainly want to play that. He says, I'll just have to figure out if I'm going to become a Democrat or an independent, but I can't stay Republican. Stewart says he's disappointed with the inroads that the Austin 12 made with Bush, even though there were no inroads. It's all illusion, as those of us in the reality-based community well realize. It's just easy to fake a log closet Republican out. He said, when we met with George Bush back in 2000, we were feeling as though we were going to make progress. And then now, just look what's happened over the last 8 years. It was a lie. Well, duh. Says he's not supporting McCain. He said he's really not on board with Obama either. He did support Clinton during the primaries and said that Obama needs more than just a change message to win him over. It's stubborn to the very core. Those are the ones that will be standing in the middle of the road cursing God during the rapture, which I neither promote or don't promote. Any case, some of the Austin 12 are unhappy with McCain, according to this article. Well, duh. And I could easily see why. We have got a Scott Hutch. He is president of an advertising agency known as the Delta Group. Imagine that. Money, money. And a former vice president of the Virginia Log Closet Republicans. And he said recent reports that McCain had secret meetings with Salmon, who is now the president of the Log Closet Republicans, shows that McCain is receptive to learning more about issues that affect the gay and lesbian community. This is one of the ones who will go to the who will die with the gun in their hand. They will pull their Republican voting registration card from their cold, dead hands. Lord have mercy. Nothing more horrifying than a headstrong. Lord, now he get this. He voted for Ron Paul in the Republican primary. He said he's going to vote for McCain in the general election because of his, quote, market-oriented approach to economic issues and his commitment to winning the war in Iraq. I tell you, people, that they're not on the same planet. He says, I'm not going to be voting as a single-issue gay voter, he says proudly. And he goes on to whine about the fact that McCain's been criticized for his lack of support on gay issues in Congress, including his no votes in the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and a hate measure crime. And McCain is also continuing to support the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, things that we already know. Anyway, he's lamenting those things. But, Hutch says, he's not bothered by those positions. He's simply not bothered about those positions. He says, then he tries to mix Obama into it, saying Obama's really not supportive of gay issues. And even though Obama has come out against the marriage, motion in California to put the voters to vote down the gay marriage in California. And in fact, he says, I think if Obama were really, really pressed to speak on the record, that people are going to be really surprised how tepid support is for a lot of issues that gay people look at as bread and butter issues. That gay people look at, you see, he's not a gay people. He's putting it in the phraseology in the personage that he becomes not one of those people. Those are not his issues, after all. He's not a what was the phrase he used? He used the phrase, what was it? Something that he's for economic? I lost the reference, but he's in there somewhere. He's for globalization, Walmart, the American way, big flags, big cars, rough, tough stuff. These are homosexuals who can pass for straight, mind you. You could tell by their macho attitudes. Then we have the lesbian. We have a lesbian. Her name is Rebecca Mysteri, I believe it's pronounced. And she is the only lesbian of the original Austin 12, by the way. And she's supportive also of McCain. And she's called him the best Republican the party could have offered up this year. And she's going to vote, by God, for McCain in the general election. I've always been a fan of his, she said. Oh, my stars. Oh, we need to send some of the lesbians that we know from the show, some of our lesbian friends over to have a little meeting with her in the ladies' room and straighten her out. She said, he's a maverick. Yeah, right. And he appeals to me because, you see, she's a maverick. She's not voting with the mainstream corporate for-profit media endorsed. And she's breaking with that, you see. Yeah, right. He's a maverick, and that appeals to me because I'm a maverick, too. I'm not mainstream. You're an idiot, my dear. She says he doesn't march in lockstep with the party over every issue of this White House. Now, she works as an international foreign assistance person for the federal government, and she applauded McCain's opposition to the federal marriage amendment. By God, these people are sticking to that. They are clinging to the fact he voted against the federal marriage amendment. But he didn't, not because he was against it in the sense of it was wrong for LGBT, not that he was objecting that it was wrong for same-sex couples to marry, but he was doing the standard Republican trick of saying it's a states' right issue. In other words, he was refusing to comment on it by moving it off to being a states' right issue. And of course, you know, he's weighing in on California as not being a states' right issue by supporting it, but that's neither here nor there. But nonetheless, because he opposed the FMA, Federal Marriage Amendment, many of the log closet Republicans just cherish and love him, even though by no means and by no stretch of the imagination was that an endorsement or in any way supportive of the LGBT community. He's completely opportunistic, as it always is. Now, get this. She said, she's got the nerve to say, I'm not particularly bothered. Not particularly bothered is a direct quote. I'm not particularly bothered by McCain's opposition to the federal hate crimes and employment non-discrimination bills in Congress because she's conflicted on those issues. You stupid dyke. Sorry. And as far as I'll be equal time here, his stupid faggot, Salmon. Good Lord, I'm ashamed of these people. My stars. She says she's not bothered by McCain's opposition to federal hate crimes, even though hate crimes are growing leaps and bounds, even though so many transgendered people are bearing a terrible, terrible price and burden for not presenting themselves in the accustomed way that society wants them to present themselves. She's not bothered either by the employment non-discrimination bills in Congress. Also, this would be a great help to transgendered folks because people are trying to transgender to transition on the job and any number of other issues that transgendered folks go through. But she's not worried about, you see, because she's got her steak and eggs. She's got her house, and she's got her air-conditioned car, and she's an international foreign assistance person for the federal government. And by God, she's not particularly bothered by McCain's opposition to the federal hate crimes laws. And she's really not bothered by the employment non-discrimination bills because she's conflicted. Oh, Jesus wept. And then we have Jim McFarland. Jim McFarland. He's an assistant general counsel for the Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance. Now imagine what this man does for a living. General counsel. This means he's a lawyer for a life insurance company, which means he spends his days finding ways for Northwest Mutual Life not to pay their policyholders following a death. Oh, that's a great Republican job, Jim. He intends to vote for McCain. Surprise, surprise, in the general election. And he says he's also going to voice support for McCain during the Republican National Convention this summer because he's an alternate delegate from Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin, the home of the Wide Stance Larry Public Airport Lounge. McFarland says he's, quote, cautiously optimistic. Imagine that. Cautiously optimistic. That McCain will be an improvement over Bush for the LGBT community. Not a damn thing would happen regarding LGBT individuals and rights during the entire period of a McCain presidency, except things will get worse for all of us with hot-tempered, hot-button McCain in charge of the nukes. God knows where we'll be after 4 years of that PST-affected individual, or PTS, rather. Post-traumatic stress, PTSD. You can't go be in a prison camp that long without coming out with traumatic stress, without stress. I don't think I would like to have him to be president, the nukes. He says McCain should emphasize his experience and views on foreign policy and the war on terrorism to win the general election. However, as I'll be covering in just a while, this is in direct contradiction to what the Republicans want McCain to hit on. They want him to stop emphasizing his experience, and they want him to stop emphasizing his views on foreign policy, and they want him to stop emphasizing his views on terrorism and safety. They want him to start beating the gay marriage abortions, bring out your dead, drum. But McFarland is cautiously optimistic. Well, there's fools and damn fools. McFarland is of the latter. But McFarland leaves himself an out, says a poor pick for a running mate might change his mind. I suppose if he had the devil himself, that would... Then we have Scott Everetts. Now, Scott is also a big money guy. He is vice president for international affairs of OraSure Technology. Now, little Scotty hasn't yet decided between McCain and Obama. He's supposed to attend the Republican National Convention this year, but he's yet to make a decision on how he's going to vote in the general election. He says he's never once in his whole live-long Republican life ever cast a ballot for a Democratic candidate since he began voting in 1980. but now he's considering a vote for Obama. Do you think the Republicans give a damn, sir? They just want your money. Lord have mercy. But Everett has noted in the true Republican fashion that he has some concerns about some of Obama's fiscal positions and some of the fiscal matters. Now, how? The regular listeners to this network know the depth to which the Bush administration has driven this economy. And people working 2-3 jobs just to buy gas to get to the 2-3 jobs. Nonetheless, Everett, one of our queer brothers and sisters, says, I remain a Republican for a whole host of reasons. Many of them would cause concern if Barack Obama were to become President Obama, meaning many of his reasons. Many of his reasons would concern him. Ah, Lord, the way these people are. Many of those reasons would concern him if Barack Obama were to become President Obama. So it's the money. It's the money. Because we don't want no poor people to get it if they ain't working. Boy, they'd take your Social Security from grandma in a heartbeat if they could get away with it. And in fact, they've tried doing it by privatizing it. Now, he was Bush's AIDS czar, by the way. And he was the Deputy Health and Human Services Secretary for Bush. And he's concerned about McCain's positions on don't ask, don't tell, and hate crimes, and INDA. But he believes that we can work with McCain on those issues. Fool, you are a fool. Many of the Austin 12, by the way, are particularly concerned over McCain's lack of attention to the HIV prevention issues. Finding the number of... their findings recently, the number of gay men between the ages of 13 and 24 have been diagnosed with HIV has increased by 12% alone this year. Now, Carl Schmidt, who's a D.C.-based AIDS activist, said he wants McCain to speak out on HIV and AIDS domestically and talk about prevention. Yeah, that'll work. Schmidt also said, these are log closet Republicans talking. Schmidt said that the Bush administration has ignored the gay population. I think if it were another population, they'd be all over it. Meaning if straight white men got it, that they would be all over it, no doubt. He said it's an emergency, and you have to deal with it like an emergency. And then Greer comes back and says he's applauding Bush for the attention and the funding he's given to fight HIV overseas, but he's not paying attention to the epidemic. You know, these are all just splattering the point about the Republicans don't give a damn about the poor black people in Africa. And I'm sure the United States has participated minimally in helping them, considering that we have no money. We are at the bottom of the economic ladder. We are a debtor nation. We even owe money, may I remind your listeners, we owe money to Mexico, which is not to diminish our friends from south of the border. But for crying out loud, we owe money to a country who is so whose residents have to crawl under a electronic fence to find work, to send home to Mexico. And we owe them money. And I'll tell you what was it, 9:38, it's time for me to give my voice a little rest. I think what we will do is take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, I'll have all sorts of news stories to tell you. And toll-free line, 877, the number 4, head on. If you have unlimited long distance, use 304-658-3333.
I know that inside now I'm sick. I'm not sick just sexually. I'm sick in a lot of ways. Immature, childlike. And the sex part of it is a symptom, like a stomach ache is a symptom of who knows what.
There was nothing else available in the culture in those years. There were no alternate models of what homosexuality meant. And so I was a thorough believer. I was very much imprisoned by the going psychoanalytic model. And that model told me that I was, the mild word was a character disorder, but often I was simply described as diseased. My condition, and it was always called a condition, was pathological.
Homosexuality is in fact a mental illness which has reached epidemiological proportions.
I was wondering if you think that there are any, quotes, happy homosexuals for whom homosexuality would be, in a way, their best adjustment to life.
The fact that somebody is homosexual, a true obligatory homosexual, automatically rules out the possibility that he will remain happy for long, in my opinion. I think the whole idea of saying the happy homosexual is to, again, to create a mythology about the nature of homosexuality.
The good news, according to the psychoanalytic model, was that my disease could be cured. That is, if I presented myself for psychotherapeutic treatment, and if my determination to change was strong enough to overcome this faulty family configuration that I happen to have been born into. It didn't work for anybody that I knew personally, and I don't think it works for anybody I don't know either.
There is a town in North Ontario with dream, comfort, and memory to spare. In my mind,
that is the world's most fabulous lesbian, Ms. Katie Lang. Long may she wave. Of course, doing a cover of the old Neil Young track, Helpless. And it's a great find. Always been a very touching song for me. Going to touch again on the log lines. I promise I'll get off this kick soon. It's just that I find them so abhorrent. I have a few facts here from the original meeting that the Austin had, 12 had with Bush back in the year 2000. They met in a room that they were met by Karl Rove and Karen Hughes. Some of the most abominable people on the entire planet they were met by. And rather than giving them a list of demands, or what they decided to do was to individually tell their stories to President Bush, as if that would affect the heart of the beast. And so Carl talked about his lesbian sister and raising three African-American children with her partner and the problems facing gay couples who want to adopt, the blah, blah, blah. And Bush said, "I appreciate it. It's true that love can come in other forms." Oh, my. McFarland told Bush about coming out while he was gay and he was serving on the city council, and how his coming out changed the views of many of his conservative friends. And Bush nodded and agreed and said, "I feel it's important that people who are gay should be more open." Should be more open with other people about their experiences so people can learn from that. And then Bush told the group that he was frustrated that people labeled him anti-gay. He said, "I just don't understand how my views can be so misunderstood." And he said, "I'm not a hateful person, and I'm not bigoted. I'm just dumb as a board." Oh, my. And Bush said he wanted to change that impression that people, that he's hateful and bigoted. Imagine that. And he laughed at the woman in death row. No, he's not hateful. No, not at all. He said he wanted to let lesbians and gay folks know that they're welcome in the campaign and the future administration. And then the log closet Republicans suggested that Bush use the phrase, "sexual orientation is not a factor," in the campaign. And according to the log closets, Bush adopted that phrase. However, of all the Bush quotes I've ever heard, I have never once heard him say, "sexual orientation is not a factor." Lord have mercy. Let's see what else is in here. Then there's a list of how they met, how they each knew the Bush family, and some were family, childhood friends. And that's all I'm going to tell you about that until next week. I'll tell you more about that next week. Let's see. Then we have a little war going on right now between Gary Bauer, who is the president of American Values, and the chairman of the Campaign for Working Families. Now, he's having a little bit of a tiff with Patrick Salmon, who is the president of the Log Closet Republicans. You see, Bauer recently released a statement just a few days back about, "Can gay marriage save the Republican Party again?" Mr. Bauer is hoping beyond hope that by raising the specter of LGBT folks being able to have equal rights with straight folks, that by raising that up as an issue again, that it can save the Republican Party. Save us. Save us by lifting up. See, he goes on to talk about this Bauer. He talks about an academic paper called "Did Gay Marriage Elect George W. Bush?" And it was presented in 2005 by the State Politics and Policy Conference in East Lansing, Michigan. And it issues how much of an impact that issue had. And they used both national and state-level survey data. A team of university professors used statistical analysis and made some discoveries. For instance, that the direct priming effect of the marriage amendment led to a 9% increase in the probability that a voter would pull the lever for Bush. And this was even after counting in things like partisanship, religion, et cetera, et cetera. And Bush, and having the issue up, that they also found that the chances of pulling a lever for Bush grew 20% among the voters who felt strongly about LGBT marriage. And Bauer goes on to say that this issue had a particularly strong effect in the battleground states. And he's explaining that these battleground states, Florida, California, Ohio, Pennsylvania, he's mentioning those three, or four rather. He says, we're hoping that same-sex marriage will matter again in 2008, even though the pundits doubt it, in light of the war and the economic issues topping the voters' concerns. He points out that only two states, Florida and California, will vote on marriage protection amendments this November. But a poll found recently that homosexuality remains very important among voters in Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania. And he points out that no candidate has won the presidency since 1960 without carrying at least two of these states. That there is a much higher percentage of voters, 34%, 28%, numbers, who said they would be less likely rather than more likely to vote for a candidate who received an endorsement from a gay rights group or a gay rights radio show. Oh, Lord. And then another paragraph, he says, so 41% of Republicans say same-sex marriage is going to be very important to their vote this year. Then there's quotes from the Alliance Defense Fund. Anyway, you get the general idea of what Gary Bauer said recently. So, not to be outdone, Patrick Salmon from the Log Closet Republicans popped up and said, referring to Bauer, he says, in his ideas piece for last Tuesday's Politico, Can Gay Marriage Save the Grand Old Party Again?, Bauer makes misleading and inaccurate claims. This is what the Log Closet Republicans are saying. Bauer argues that the issue of gay marriage helped catapult the GOP to success in 2004 and directly led to Bush's reelection. But that theory is a rumor and has been disproved. Ah, perhaps it has, Patrick. And if it has, then the correct answer would be voter fraud and manipulation and causing votes not to be counted, et cetera, et cetera. Some analysts incorrectly cited Bush's 2004 reelection to his use of the marriage issue to improve the turnout of his base. However, Matthew Dowd, Bush's chief strategist in 2004, says that marriage was not the reason Bush won reelection. Well, you know, if Bush's chief strategist, Matthew Dowd, says it, well then, hey, it must be true. He quotes Dowd as saying, at best, it doesn't move voters, and at worst, it doesn't move Republicans. It doesn't do anything. It works against them. This is what Dowd said. Why are we having this discussion, Dowd said, when we should be talking about things that matter, like the economy or health care or war? Hypocrites, hypocrites, hypocrites. And Patrick Salmon goes on to say Bauer's argument doesn't hold water because in 2008, it's not 2004, and the politics surrounding marriage are changing quickly, but oh, not quickly enough if McCain adopts the platform that the Republicans want him to take, which is to bring up the gay marriage horse and start beating on that. And then he rambles on about this, that, and the other. Acceptance of loving, committed GLB couples are on the rise as if the Republican Party had anything to do with it, is what Salmon says. And the marriage debate doesn't have the same heat it used to, even though the Log Closet Republicans came out and said that in another statement, many other times, they've been quoted as saying that, in fact, the gay marriage helped the Republicans to win, and they were very pleased with that. But now, of course, the fact that there were marriage ballots on the petition had nothing to do with it. Why? Because Dowd, the chief strategist for Bush, said so. Well, that makes it true. So a word to my fellow Republicans. They're not your fellow Republicans. They despise you, sir. You mean the LGBT folks who are duped by your organization and blinded by money. So a word to my fellow Republicans, if we choose the politics of fear and division that helped defeat our party in 06, we will alienate the independent voters who will decide this election and will suffer a big defeat in 08, blah, 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 blah. And, I have a little audio clip here from Fox News Sunday. This is the mainstream for-profit media. This is Fred Barnes, and he's talking about the McCain campaign and how ineffective it is, and telling the McCain campaign they're going to have to use gays as a wedge issue in order to appeal to the right. He says he needs to touch on these social issues, which energize the right, particularly gays in the military, for one. We know Obama's going to allow gays in the military. It's not a popular issue. These are issues McCain's going to have to use. He can't ignore the right. Bob, roll the Fox News Sunday clip, please.
McCain has to run a center-right campaign. He's paying a lot of attention to the center, and Juan, he also needs to pay attention to the right, because these are the people
where are they
he needs
go
to energize.
I'll tell you, they won't vote.
And here's what he needs to do. He needs to touch on some of the social issues which energize the right. In particular, gays in the military, for one, we know Barack Obama is for allowing gays in the military, as Bill Clinton tried to do and then backed off. This is not a popular issue. Gay marriage is another one. These are both issues that I think McCain's going to have to use. He can't ignore the right. If he does,
Fred,
he'll lose.
Where's the right going to go?
They can't stay on.
They don't like Barack
no,
Obama.
No, they get a lot of this in 2006. They'll do it again in 2008.
Last word, Bill.
Bring out your queers. We'll herd them out to the main public square and stone them. That's what we'll do. We'll scare you. Or the terrorists. We tried to scare you with the terrorists. We're going to throw in some terrorists, and maybe we'll have ourselves another little terrorist strike. You think they can't do that? No. Easy to arrange. So that's what they're going to do. Terror and lesbians and gay men. That's what the right wants McCain to do. And in fact, McCain is drifting in that direction. Of course, Obama seems to be drifting to the right, too. How far to the right, we don't know. After all, where else is the left going to go but with Obama? is there no one who will stand up for what they believe and consistently say it? Is there anyone? So the question is, how big of a issue, how big of a role will that play in 2008? Most people are saying it will play very little role, but I think people who say that underestimate the stupidity of the Christian right. By the way, the religious right is feeling left out. Christian conservatives who elected Bush are saying that they're wary of McCain, and they feel abandoned by congressional Republicans, too. There are two sources of their unhappiness. Republicans didn't rise up en masse last week when the California Supreme Court invalidated the ban on same-sex marriage. I guess it was a couple weeks ago. And to their horror, the House GOP's new family agenda focuses on pocketbooks and not orifices. I mean, pocketbooks rather than moral concerns. Yes, yes. Always concerned about who puts what where and with whom. But they're disappointed, you see, by the GOP's new family agenda. How can you have a new family agenda after you've bankrupted the entire country? Now you're focusing on pocketbook issues? Well, this is complicated. It ain't going to work. We need more penis issues. That's what we need. That's what we need in the country. Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, that slug, says in 2004 there was a great emphasis on marriage and on value voters. You know, I can't read the phrase value voters without thinking of a for sale sign, or these are on sale at Walmart. Get the most for your money. It's a value voter. Of course, Tony is president of the Family Research Council, and He says, and now you see the Republicans are running from these values issues. And by taking a path away from the values issues, Republicans are going to find themselves in the, hang on, wait for it, in the wilderness. The biblical wilderness. They will be babbling. Babbling in the wilderness. Lord have mercy. Congressional Republicans insist that they haven't given up the fight against abortion rights and the fight against same-sex marriage. And there was a session with reporters about a week or so. A minority leader said, we have never walked away from who we are. But we don't control the agenda anymore. Certainly the Democrats have done everything imaginable to avoid these issues. That doesn't mean we're any less committed. Yes, the religious right is concerned about the 2008 agenda. Discussion of lower gas prices, family-friendly work week, health care for all, reduction in college tuition, better care for troops and veterans. We're talking about that and not what goes where? And orifices? And the decline of the threat, complete overthrow of marriage, which of course the LGBT community represent. Ethel's going to say to Fred, well, Fred, now that I can marry a woman, I've been down to that lesbian biker bar, and I think I'm going to leave you. Yeah. And there's a Republican, his name is Pitts, and he heads the GOP Values Action Team. Isn't that a spiffy little name? Perky. Values Action Team. And describes the new family agenda as just one tool in the toolbox. Our platform by the end of the year is going to include pro-life and pro-family issues. More of the Republican agenda will be coming soon. They really don't know which end is up, do they? The agenda released by Conservative Republican Study Commission focused mostly on economic and energy issues, with only a glancing mention of abortion and gay marriage, etc., etc. Then there's discussion about whether that's actually a good idea. The Republicans are actually in touch again with the real world. But that's not going to do for the right wingers who are the Christians who are feeling left out. The Republican leader, what's his name, Granger in Texas, says this in no way means we're abandoning critical positions on key social issues that are integral to the Republican Party, meaning me and you. Frankly, when you have Democrats running as Republicans on key social issues like the right to bear arms, it goes to show that these issues are winners for us. Unbelievable. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention's policy arm says that sometimes it's necessary to draw a picture and connect the dots. And if they're going to abandon social issues, the Democrats will win. That's up to them. Then there's a quote by Gary Bauer, which pretty much comes in the article that we just covered. And Bob is reminding me that we're about due for a top of the hour. So I imagine that we should do that just a second here. Click, click. Boy, I tell you, these internets are special. I get to talk to Bob in production chat without saying a word. Ain't that wonderful? In any case, we should take a top of the hour break. And as we go to the top of the hour, it's toll-free, 877, the number 4. We'll be right back, number 4 head-on, rather. That's 2366, 443-2366. We'll be right back.
You thought America guaranteed your rights to free speech and religion? Think again. On the next Speechless, Silencing the Christians, students in Ashland, Kentucky are forced to participate in pro-homosexual diversity training or face suspension.
And in a free society, people are going to hear things they don't agree with. And if we can silence anyone who offends us, there won't be much speech going on in America.
Canadian hate crimes expert Tristan Emmanuel offers a cautionary tale for America by showcasing the abuses people in that country are already facing because of hate crimes laws.
We completely shy away from that legitimate avenue of discussion, morality, because it's now become politicized.
And go in-depth on the case of the Philly 11 and see how the Bible was deemed to be the instrument of a hate crime.
This is, we believe, probably the first time, if not the only time, anybody has been charged with a hate crime where the instrument of the hate crime is, at least incidentally, a Bible.
Be heard. Don't be speechless. Visit www.silencingchristians.com and take action today.
Me too.
riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And we're back, riding across the desert of a horse named Head On Radio Network. I am Peter Godbold, and this is Strictly Confidential. You can call toll-free 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 443-2366. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you can use that, and that's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And we have a message from a listener, and it's from our dear friend Kate. That's wonderful. She says she's glad to hear the show's alive, and welcoming Strictly Confidential back. And she says she was talking about folks who are values voters. Values voters buy their boas from the Family Dollar store. And she talked about this. She also mentioned the biker bar that Ethel's going to run off to and find herself another mate besides Fred. Let's talk about Florida's Gavener, the gay governor of Florida. I think I may be the only homosexual in the state of Florida who hasn't had sex with Charlie Crist. I believe he's pretty much made the rounds. I think I'm the last man standing. He's done everybody else. But in any case, we'll start with a little hurricane story. You realize in the state of Florida, hurricane insurance is virtually impossible to obtain. So Crist came up with a solution to that. It's a program in Florida called Citizens Property and Casualty Insurance Company. It's a state-owned insurance company. He's bypassing the private sector altogether. And it's interesting, this insurance company will have more than $434 billion worth of exposure should there be a terrible storm in Florida, but it only has $2 billion of reserves to pay the claims. What a wonderful Republican plan that is. Also, the former Florida Governor Jeb Bush broke the habit of, he violated Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, which is thou shalt not criticize fellow Republicans. And Bush came out and said, my beloved state of Florida has taken steps that are bigger than the disasters that they're going to help. In other words, he's not particularly happy about it. But the big news about Crist is that he's engaged. Yes, the Gavener is in fact engaged to a woman that he met last September during a trip to New York. Now, Crist is 51, and he has asked Carol Rome, his girlfriend of 9 months, to marry him. On Thursday at his St. Petersburg apartment, the St. Petersburg Times reports this. She's special in every way, Crist says. She's brilliant. She's beautiful. She's sweet. I'm very, very lucky, he told the Times. And he picked out a sapphire and diamond ring for her on Wednesday, and points out that he got it at the Gold and Diamond Center in St. Petersburg Northeast Shopping Center. No doubt a Republican friend. You know, not only the name of the store, but the directions to it, the Northeast Shopping Center. Of course, newspapers normally just report these things and never, ever, ever ask a question, could it be politically motivated? Newspapers never, ever ask that question. As we know, the for-profit media turns a blind eye and never goes to any depth whatsoever. But the St. Petersburg Times did, in fact, suggest that it was a politically motivated marriage, because, you see, everyone in the state of Florida knows that he's a Gavener. That's not talked about in polite company, but nonetheless... Well, you know, I can't prove it. I'm the only homosexual in Florida who hasn't been in bed with a man, but so I don't know personally, but rumor has it, from very good sources, that he is the Gavener. So the St. Petersburg Times asked their readers, do you think Governor Crist's engagement is politically motivated? Three possible choices, yes, no, or I couldn't care less. Well, lo and behold, the state of Florida is hip to the trick. Yes, it is politically motivated, 78.7%. No, only 6%. And I couldn't care less, only 15%. Those are the results early this morning. They probably changed a little by now. But Chris says the couple's going to plan a fall wedding, and it's going to be a small ceremony in St. Petersburg. And there'll be a large reception at the governor's mansion here in Tallahassee. And he says he hopes that he and Rome can have a child. Oh, Lord. Well, there's Viagra for that, sir. He said, I'm very, very happy. I love her. Now, Chris' relationship with Rome became national news when he brought her, and by the way, she's described as a businesswoman, and what a deal she made, honey. He brought her, the businesswoman, to a gathering with Republican John McCain on Memorial Day weekend. And, of course, Chris' name is coming up more and more often as a potential vice presidential candidate. And the wife just happened to fall in place. I think we have some audio, some breathless audio from a television station. Bob, roll the Chris audio, please.
What wedding lovers? Governor Charlie Crist is engaged. The governor proposed to girlfriend Carol Rome this morning at his condo in St. Petersburg. He says they may plan a fall wedding, most likely a small ceremony in St. Petersburg, followed by a larger reception at the governor's mansion. The 51-year-old governor is said to be one of the choices as running mate for presumptive Republican presidential nominee John McCain.
Imagine that. Now, Rome, the businesswoman, and what business deal she made, is a 1992 honors graduate of Georgetown University. And she is the president of her family's 100-year-old Franco-American novelty company, which is a Halloween costume business. This is, of course, frowned upon by the Christians because Halloween is bad, and so they call it Fall Festival. I mean, you know, It just amazed me. July the 4th is not Independence Day anymore. It's July the 4th. Halloween is now being hijacked as the Halloween or the fall festival, and everyone's worried about Christmas. But in any case, that's neither here nor there. She has two daughters, ages 9 and 11, and they're from a previous marriage, a Todd Rome of CEO. He was a CEO of Blue Star Jets. Yes. Money. She stopped managing her company's daily businesses, meaning the Franco-American Novelty Company, when she moved to Fisher Island near Miami in 06. Now, Todd Rome estimates his ex-wife's income has been as high as $1.48 million, and Chris earned $140,000, neither here nor there. They met at a dinner where friends were fundraising. The couple's been seen frequently at Jimmy Buffett's concerts in Tampa and on the campaign trail with McCain and the Republican Party of Florida dinner last month. And Chris told a crowd of 700 donors that he's very lucky to have Rome in his life. She joined Chris on a 12-day trip through London and Paris and Normandy, et cetera, et cetera. And here's an interesting detail. Chris was briefly married in college, but divorced less than a year later. Sounds like a classic case of marry my way out of homosexuality to me, divorced in less than a year. My God, and they talk about us cheapening marriage. And that experience, so this, it's been a lot of years past since college where he has successfully managed to remain single. As a now becoming the Gavener, it is necessary to install a wife in the wife department. So he has done that. He said his marriage that lasted less than a year in college, it made me very selective, he said candidly. He's been looking for the right man. He says, those things tend to make you gun-shy, and I'm so blessed to have found such a wonderful woman. It sure is great to find the right one. So there you have it. The Gavener is getting married to a businesswoman, and what a deal she made. Oh, Lord, there's a new study out that gays in the military do not threaten morale. The study was conducted of 4 retired military officers, including a 3-star Air Force lieutenant general who retired in 93 and was tasked with implementing the policy. And he says that evidence shows that allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly is unlikely to pose any significant risk to morale, good order, discipline, or cohesion, as has already been proved, and I'm adding this part, as has already been proved by countless countries other than the United States whose gay and lesbian soldiers can serve openly. Yet another report that will be buried as quickly as possible. By the way, I had a little something in here regarding the Larry Craig, the Republican convention is in none other than Minneapolis-St. Paul. And as many of you will recall, Minneapolis-St. Paul is the home of Wide Stance Larry's bathroom stall. And it is a bathroom stall that the Grand Ole Party would like to keep closed. But as the media will be flooding in, and I mean international media from all over the world, they're going to have to walk right past the restroom that Larry Craig was busted in, and there's going to be a lot of temptation for them to take pictures and talk about it. Now, many of these reporters have never been able to cover this story, and how could they resist? It's right there in front of them. Many of them are going to be obligated, probably by their publishers, to stop and post a story about it. Now, it's mind you, from a party that declares itself strong on family values, it's going to be very unwelcome. One wonders why they even scheduled the meeting there, their convention in Minneapolis-St. Paul, in view of the restroom, but nonetheless, a blind spot. You recall that Craig was arrested and pleaded guilty, and he said that he had a wide stance and he was not toe-tapping. He absolutely was not toe-tapping. In any case, the parade of tourists that asks for directions to that bathroom stall has died down just a little bit since last summer, but it's expected to go through the roof when the press arrives in town late August, whether or not Craig himself shows up or not. And the airport has no plans to cordon off or restrict access to the men's room during the convention. It hasn't received as much coverage as you would like to see. It's in a secure part of the airport. It's a passengers-only portion of the airport. So it's hard for reporters to sneak in heavy equipment to do live broadcasts from the men's room. So this will be an opportunity for the reporters who are on the other side of that passengers-only area to actually already in the passengers-only area to do a story. And you remember Craig, he said he was going to resign, then he refused to resign. And who could forget that Craig has just introduced a new marriage protection amendment against gay marriage? That's right. Keep them homosexuals in the bathroom where they belong. I won't want them getting married. Can't have them getting married. By the way, did you hear the story in San Francisco? You gotta love this. A San Francisco group is going to rename a sewage plant after George W. Bush. It's a fitting tribute. California group submitted a proposal on Monday to rename a sewage treatment plant after President Bush, calling the initiative a fitting tribute to the outgoing chief executive and the mess that he will leave behind. And the Presidential Memorial Commission of San Francisco wants to switch the name of the Oceanside Water Pollution Control Plant to the George W. Bush Sewage Plant. And they're going to put the issue on November ballot. And they turned up more than 10,000 signatures in San Francisco, and elected officials, organizer Brian McConnell said, and the issue needed only 7,000 names to qualify. However, they got way more than that. And proponents of renaming the plant see it as a fitting tribute, but the Republicans are rather upset about it. I mean, after all, the Southern Methodist University, we're on record as saying we do not want the library there. And so why not let him have a sewage treatment plant left in his name? Sounds like justice to me. The White House is not returning phone calls about the George W. Bush sewage treatment plant, but the Republicans in Sacramento are saying it is a horrible, horrible idea. And speaking of Southern Methodist University, the Southern Methodist University South Central Jurisdiction meets next week in Dallas. It will be on the 16th in Dallas to hear the challenge to the Bush Library being built at Southern Methodist University. So this is the end times in terms of the Southern Methodist University, SMU, as to whether it will become the laughingstock of universities everywhere or whether it will maintain its good name. So anyway, we'll be talking about that next week. The meetings will take place on the 16th, which I believe is Wednesday. That's the Southern Methodist South Central Jurisdiction regarding the objections to right-thinking Methodists regarding having George Bush's cesspool library and think tank. It's not so much the library anyone objects to, even though that is a ding in your shining crown. It's the Republican think tank, which will have the good name of the Methodist Church and the Methodist University stamped on it without any control whatsoever of the Southern Methodist University. And, of course, its only reason to exist will be to rewrite history and to polish the image of George Bush in history. In other words, to rewrite history. Amazing. Where shall we go? No, we did that. This is an interesting article. One wonders about this. It's about the Los Angeles Police Department, L.A. A policeman that is alleging religious discrimination. We're going to be going to our dance floor across the street to the gay bar with our friend Hank Steinhauer shortly, so I'm going to abbreviate this somewhat. But basically, the LAPD is engaged in a religious discrimination lawsuit for disciplining an employee for off-duty remarks he made about homosexuals. Now, apparently in 2006, he delivered this officer a eulogy at a fellow officer's funeral. The Sergeant Eric Hollifield, who is also a pastor, you see, this policeman, who was delivering the eulogy, said during the eulogy that homosexual acts are sinful and an abomination and would lead to condemnation in hell or the lake of fire if one did not repent. Now, one wonders how a pastor, any pastor, how this could come up at a funeral, at a eulogy. One wonders if the deceased police officer or the fellow officers was gay, and he was letting everyone there at the eulogy know that he was going to go to hell. One wonders if the officer was killed by a homosexual, and he's pointing out that homosexuals are sinful and an abomination, and we're going to go to hell in the lake of fire. One wonders about all these things. I would dearly love to know why he said that at the eulogy. But nonetheless, he did. And so after those comments, the police department passed him up for promotions and pay raises, et cetera, et cetera. And since he was off duty, it's a very gray area. But when it comes to enforcing the law, the head of the LAPD is saying it has to be done impartially. Everyone has to be treated with respect. So remarks like this, even out of uniform and even off duty, are of concern. Now, Hollifield, the one who made the remarks at the funeral, that was in September of 06, and he was at a funeral for a officer, Nathan Wharton, and his family asked that the sergeant deliver a short sermon. But before the large audience inside the chapel, Hollifield identified him as a sergeant and said, and as the fallen officer's supervisor, and he was wearing black rather than his uniform, but he proceeded to say that all the homosexuals are going to hell. One wonders. In any case, the officer is bringing charges against the LAPD that they are refusing to promote him because of religious bias, and that he couldn't discuss the details of the complaint. It's almost as if an officer could be, the only example I can think of is being a member of the KKK and making hate speech, saying hate speech at the KKK, and then being refused for promotion. But one understands a KKK member ranting about black folks at a KKK meeting because that's the nature of that animal. That's the nature of that beast. You knew it was a snake, he said. But one wonders how this fellow could have said that. If anyone ever comes across a story of why, in the name of God's good heaven, this man begin talking about homosexuals all going to hell at the eulogy of a fellow officer, I would love to know what brought that on. Devil made me do it, he says. Let's see. I suppose you've all heard the story very briefly here. I'll tell you about the pregnant man who had, it's a complicated story. The pregnant man story. He was on Oprah Winfrey. He's a transsexual. This story has become increasingly a burden to the transgender community. It's pretty much no one's referring to him as a woman. They're calling him a pregnant man, which is, of course, making for all sorts of late-night jokes on the Letterman show and all of the others. And there's a lot of attention being applied to the humor, whether being paid to, rather than any sort of a outreach to the man who has had the who is transgendered. One wonders at the wisdom of a woman like that who actually gave an interview to one of the tabloids, the supermarket checkout tabloids. So she didn't help matters much, but it became spectacle, the pregnant man, and I believe the transgender community would rather it just go away. If you remember, there was a movie called The Watermelon Man back in 1970, and it was about a white man who wakes up one morning and he finds himself to be black, and he goes through his day and his experiences and experiences them as a black man in society of the time. Wouldn't it be wonderful if there were a movie in this day and age about waking up as a transsexual and knowing and presenting what it's like for them to go through their daily routines and what they go through. We need another Watermelon Man, folks, but not about the black experience, but about the transgendered experience, the most neglected letter of our rainbow, the LGBT. So in any case, we've got Hank from Miami, Hank Steinhauer, over at the gay bar across the street this evening. And Hank has provided us with a Gloria Gaynor set that is just wonderful. You can find out more about Hank at hankdisco.multiply.com. That's hankdisco.multiply.com. And so as we gather up our raincoats and our little umbrellas and our pocketbooks, we're going to head on over to the Paradise Dance Hall.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.
a man, and he's not a shy princess. So I try to be alike when it's only self-defense. You've got grace, he's got style, and together you'll rhyme. So remember to be true to the legend that you are. All the fame in you has worked miracles so far. So head up high and don't be shy. You can reach for any star. You can do all you can. Say I am what I am. But
you're alive. Count number one if you want to survive. If you disappear and you don't get breaks, you can make it happen because you got what it takes. Luck isn't everything that really matters. Do what you have to do to make things better. Get on your feet and hold your head up high. Make up your mind, boy. Do it.
Nobody can want it.
Nobody does high energy like Hank Steinhauer from Miami. That was Hank taking names and kicking butt on the dance floor in South Florida. Way to go, Hank. That was a fabulous set. You can find out more about Hank at hankdisco.multiply.com, and we're pleased to have Hank as one of our DJs at the gay bar across the street. Let's see. I want to remind you that tomorrow evening, we have a special guest arranged by Mr. Glenn Rivera, who is our Executive Director of Talent Bookings. His name is Vincent Capretta. Vincent is a very different music guest. Also, excuse me, frog in my throat.